So I want to welcome everybody to our final talk. We'll have another class next week, discussion on this subject. But this is the final talk in the series, the sixth, I believe, the sixth talk in the Distortions of Mind. And this talk is on the boring mind. And it's interesting, the boring. It throws a chill into people. If when you say I am bored, or someone says that in front of you, suddenly you feel on your guard, don't you? That somehow you haven't lived up to the excitement and expectation of the meeting or of the connection, and that there's a pressure on now for you to change this and turn this around. If somebody is impolite enough to say that in your company, it really does pale the occasion. So we're going to look at this quality of mind. And may I say to begin that what we're really doing in all these distortions of mind, and this is the 19th of these distortions of mind that I've spoken about, what we're really doing is we're looking at how the mind conjures up its own perception as its reality. Now, unless we are willing to challenge these realities that the mind does through its own internal verbalization and the moods that are associated with that inward speech, we're going to just reinforce an old consciousness that we have lived with our whole life. I think the compelling need of the time requires us to evolve into a consciousness, a new consciousness. And I think it is the most important individual act that we can do, is to bring forth that evolution of a new consciousness. And some people would argue and say that the most important individual thing they could do was to take political action or social action against the problems, which is noteworthy enough, except for the fact that if those actions come from the same reactivity, aversion, or attraction, that of the same dimension of consciousness from which the problem was derived, then those supposedly corrective actions won't be corrective at all. They'll just reinforce that dimension of consciousness. You just lean left instead of leaning right. And it's the leaning that creates the problem, the ripple effect throughout the the common human consciousness of human beings. So we have to look for a different way to intercede into this problem than merely forcing the opposing point of view. And we have to understand that that's not just a light statement. It's not a sound good statement, a sound bite. It really has a motivation behind it, where we just can't keep doing the things that we're doing and continue to expect this species to survive, even into this century, let alone onward, that something radical needs to take place. And the reason we're looking at these different shapes and forms of mind, dispositions of mind, is because this is where we lose ourselves within our own inward reactivity, within our own inward resistance and argument. These different distortions, and I've just picked out 19 of the first 1,000 I could come to, that we have to understand how they throw us off base, how they keep us in line with their conjecture, their perception, their projection, and how we just follow suit within that mind streaming, that trance of distortion, and in doing so, we just reinforce that will arise again, sooner rather than later. And that not only that, but in the 100th monkey syndrome, it will arise more firmly and quickly in the next person as well. I believe that what we strengthen in ourselves strengthens the common tenor of all of human consciousness. So when we're looking at boredom, the heat is on here. I mean, there is nothing, I think, except perhaps doubt, which are, they're interrelated, by the way, and I hope to show that tonight. But I don't think there's the mind state that's more damaging and crucial for our understanding than boredom. Because it's where we throw in the towel. This isn't worth being here. Simply, boredom says simply, it isn't worth paying attention. And for God's sake, if it's not worth paying attention, we're not moving anywhere. Let us be clear about that. That unless we establish attention first, that nothing is going to grow or evolve at all. And so when we talk about becoming disillusioned with our old consciousness, the first question that comes to my mind is, what does disillusionment mean? It means moving beyond the illusion and perception of the problem of the mind, the perceived position, perceived problem of the mind. Now, how do we move beyond the illusion? Well, we have to first be aware of what that particular stance, that particular posture of mind is alluding, is perceiving. And then we have to deeply question that orientation, that perception. Instead of just assuming it, instead of just basing our assumptions and actions upon it, we have to back up to a quieter place and ask important questions that intercede between our reaction to having that state of mind and begin to really look and decipher and understand the state of mind itself. We're asking for something that's very difficult. But really, it's not difficult. What it requires is being quiet. And what it requires within that quietness is being interested in yourself. So all of this has to do with arresting the mind's, how the mind dictates the perceptions of reality. And last week we talked about the moody mind. How we cast moods upon life and then relate to life as if that mood were true. And then we just reinforce that mood and our adherence to it so that it forms into attitude. Well, boredom is very much an accompanying part of the moody mind in the sense that boredom has a particular disposition to it, a particular way that it relates to everything, as being uninteresting. It's an uninteresting. I'm uninterested. Now, sooner or later, a catastrophe will happen, which will force us question whatever assumption we have made about a particular disposition of mind, what we have lived with, the attitudes that we have held. And the one seasonal reminder I get that I think some of us miss is the story of Scrooge, where he is caught in a particular disposition to life, a particular attitude that he hardens from his past, which is played out in the themes of the movie. And as it hardens into his character, you can see that he's not open to any other possibility. besides the way he has learned and cemented his hold and his perceptions on the world. And then a catastrophe happens. A catastrophe. The catastrophe in which he sees from a different vantage point, from a different perspective, what his intentionality, what his posture has done to other people. And eventually, what it does to himself. And it's that objectivity that allows him eventually to move beyond that particular disposition and harden character. Now, many of us are not fortunate enough to have that objectivity, or even we all have the objectivity. We have access to it. We have the possibility of employing it. But many of us don't know how to do that, or we don't really want to do it because we're used to. We're not in a state of crisis like Scrooge. We don't have the blade of the knife against our throat. And so we just sort of hum along within our common modes of being. And that isn't going to change much in us, as I've mentioned many times. If you think death will save you, you're wrong, because you'll just die in character. It won't awaken you necessarily at all. But it certainly isn't going to evolve, none of us are going to evolve into a new level of consciousness, a new dimension of consciousness, just doing the same things. I mean, we come here for a particular reason, to risk the willingness to change our basic assumptions of life. If you're coming here to just for attendance and audience because it feels good and then you can leave and forget it, you're really wasting your time. We're calling upon a deeper sense of you, a sense of you that has that objectivity, a sense of you that is willing to apply that objectivity to the most difficult aspects, uncertainties and self-assumptions that you have. And to look anew at those ways that we have lived and to ask critical questions as to whether that has to be my course in life. So it's helpful from time to time to take inventory and to really look and see whether coming to classes, whether meditating has allowed a stretch, a movement, a questioning, a resolution of heart to do just that, or whether it's more like going to church. So the illusion we're trying to dissolve, disillusionment, the illusion we're trying to dissolve in looking at boredom is the need to be stimulated. The need for excitement to be the conditioned reason that I will be alive and attend to something. It's amazing, you know, it's just amazing what the excitement factor is in this culture. And it has been raised, the bar keeps getting raised on what it is that we'll pay attention to. And the level of stimulation, the level of input it just seems to me, and I don't know, maybe it's my old age or my aging that has led me to this, but it just seems as if we're constantly re-stimulating ourselves or adding a new dimension of stimulation for us to be able to feel alive in ourselves here. And it's as if we, the assumption that our culture makes is that it should be a life of many highs and few lows. Yes, inevitably there will be a few lows, but that's really not what it's about. It's about the highs. It's about that it doesn't get any better than this beer commercial. And we all look to conjure the conditions so that we can have that moment, skiing or whatever it be. And yet, the sense of simplicity, the Dharma, I mean, if the Dharma has a proclamation, an emancipation proclamation, it's the word simplicity. Simplicity. Simplicity is living life on its own terms. Walk through the forest, or just taking a walk, of not having the need for life to be conditioned in order to rest upon stimulation for its conditioning. But boredom is about inducing excitement in order to live. Isn't it? And when we're bored, that's what we seek to do. Because we take boredom as a fact that that's what's called for, to overturn the boredom, to make it, to correct the ship. So we take the boredom as the truth. And in a moment we'll talk about why the sense of boredom is so difficult to tolerate inwardly. We have to look at that. You see, you can't just say, okay, boredom. We have to look at what where it is that we buy in to the messages of boredom. And may I say, you know, simplicity has its basis in joy, not excitement. Joy. Excitement is conditioned. Excitement, you have to conjure up the right ingredients for the mind to elevate itself towards excitement, energetically, stimulation, etc. Joy is free of conditions. So the question is there joy beyond excitement? Excitement may be temporary and circumstantial, but we have to show up for joy. We have to arrive. We have to be present in order for joy to be there. You don't have to do that in order to be excited. To show up for joy. You see, boredom, the problem with boredom is that you don't feel any joy, is that we don't show up for boredom. It's a partial heart. It's only a placeholder. It's a stopwatch. I'm bored, I don't know how many more minutes I have to go in this, but something has to come along here. It has no reference to the present at all. Because the present represents boredom. So it's looking, it's timing the next something that I can then get excited about. Now what do you think you do in meditation when you sit there? Do you look for something exciting? Are we so addicted to the need for that we won't allow boredom to enter even our meditation, which is supposed to be the essence of simplicity, to find our way back? How are we going to find our way back unless we're willing to go through disillusionment? The dissolving of the illusion of what boredom tells us we need. This is not a small thing. This one I waited to the end so that you could see it in relationship to the holiday. Against the true definition of what the holiday stands for and what we have thus made out of it. Because the true definition doesn't hold any enticement. So we've had to jack it up. And boredom then just keeps us moving to the drumbeat of expectation of what will happen, what circumstances. And our mind just loves that, you see. When we're bored, we don't want to be bored, because being bored, we're tied down to a here and now that has a feeling tone and a conversation that says, blame, blame, this is all, there's nothing here noteworthy. That's the summation. That's the illusion of what the words are saying. Listen to this, because every mind state, every trance state of mind has a story it is convincing you to believe. It is engendering a particular view of life that it demands you to believe. And we do, 99.9% of the time. We believe it. And we act from it. And all of that establishes and reinforces the old level of consciousness. It reassures that that old level of consciousness has a place in our life forever. Now the question is, are we willing? What is necessary in this is to challenge that. And when we talked about the hindrances, when we talk about the hindrances, you see, we talk about the willingness to challenge those basic patterns of mind instead of them pointing to a journey in which the story is believed and the journey is to maneuver around the inevitable quality that the story emotes. It's to go into it, not to dance from it, not to react, not to skip away, not to shunt, to go into it. Here I stand. Here I stand. Now, the problem is that there's a competing desire. We want to do that, perhaps, because that's what the meditation technique or instructor is saying. But we don't want to make any fundamental changes in our life. We don't really feel like risking what we have become to ourselves, do we? We don't want to risk what we have become to ourselves. That's really at the heart of the problem, I think. And it's a catch-22, because unless we show up, nothing reveals itself, and boredom itself is keeping us from showing up. So when the boredom comes, we don't show up, and therefore we don't break through the boredom. We behave. We agree with the boredom in its story. And so we then do whatever is necessary, which is wait expectantly for boredom to end so that we can show up. And the mind has won at that point. And so what's assured is that there will be a life full of angst and resistance and argument and dullness. You see, in boredom, the mind is actively configuring reality to be uninteresting. Let me say that again. In boredom, the mind is actively configuring reality to be uninteresting. It is not you who is configuring reality to be uninteresting. Your reaction to boredom is the you that feels uninterested. And so if we continue to resist boredom, we will be a bored person. But it is the mind that is actively configuring it. That is so... It's such a radical way of thinking. But then if we're going to evolve into a new level of consciousness, it has to be radical. There has to be a radical split off from the old perception. And we believe in the words of it, you see. The mind, in its configuration of reality being uninteresting, has a soundtrack with that perception. And the soundtrack really looks around and feels very dull. It has an emotional quality, feels dull, lifeless. And the soundtrack says something about not being up to the task of really needing or wanting to look. And just, God, how much longer? It has a very strict relationship to time. How much longer will this last? If the words were different and the emotion different, then we'd have a different mind state, which is what we've done 19 times here. We've just changed the disposition and the words, and boom, now all of a sudden you have an angry mind, or a wanting mind, or a jealous mind, or all the other countless minds that we have looked at. And we'll go from there. Okay, fine. Then that's the truth. That's the truth. Never mind that 10 minutes from now, another configuration will be, and then that will be the truth. If 10 minutes ago, jealousy was the truth, and now envy's the truth, and then boredom's the truth, what's just the truth? Where are we going to rest with the truth? Or can we begin to see that none of them are true? They're temporary perceptions, that configurations that the mind is convincing us. That none of them hold the truth. But we don't believe that. We believe that boredom is the truth. And how is it that we get out of boredom? Well, we don't really know, do we? We don't really know because we didn't do it. The mind changed configurations. The conditions that led to boredom change. And now a new conditions, prop of conditions come up. It's like you're calling the stagehands, new props, and a new state, and a new configuration is arising. And now we're angry. Where did that come from? What happened to the boredom? At least it's better than boredom, isn't it? Now I've got something to bite. You know, I'm not disengaged. You see? When we're disengaged, we have a sense of not being fully formed, not being in charge. In just a minute, I'll talk about the assumptions from that disengagement. You see, the Dharma depends upon our interest to break these assumptions. It depends. It depends on each of us finding access to interest. It's called rapture. It's one of the seven factors of enlightenment. If you missed the talk, you can go back and listen. The Dharma doesn't rest on the assumption of whatever state of mind is arising. It wants to explore that. And without the interest in the exploration, and the interest of the exploration will be directly proportional to the amount of belief that we have, or indirectly proportional to the amount of belief that we've given the state of mind. If we believe in the boredom, then we're going to have very little interest to look at it. If we don't believe in the boredom, because we're beginning to see how the mind is just configuring itself moment after moment, and I'm through with that. I'm finished. Now I'm interested. Why is it? What's happening here? Now, when I have really seen the end of what of my being enslaved within this trance, now, with that energy, I'm interested again. And the interest then begins to undermine the root system of the boredom itself. Rather than just to follow the journey of boredom to its inevitable conclusion, wondering how much longer it's going to last. Well, how much longer is this truth going to last? Of boredom. The problem is that if the interest becomes blocked by the boredom, and we try to conjure up that interest, but we believe in the boredom, then it circles back on us. Turns back in and on itself. And then we start having interest in me, and how I can get out of this boredom. How I can get away from this boredom. How I can get to something that's more exciting than this. You know, on and on we go. It's so interesting, you know, one of the most difficult hindrances by far is sleepiness, the dullness of mind. Because we think we should be just the opposite. We think we should be vital, active, aware, a meditator, you know, like on a cliff, you know, just... And it doesn't, and much of meditation doesn't feel like that at all. And so we cast true meditation, if it doesn't have the vitality and the alive and all that vigor, then we assume that this particular meditation with its sleepiness is just complete waste of time. I might as well go back to bed, we say, as sleepy as I am. But it's really that moment that is the most vital for change to occur. Where it's the most difficult, where we're challenging the basic assumptions on which our meditation rests, that it has to be invigorated and exciting and something new, and we hear all the words and it just, you know, and then we're sleepy and it falls flat. It feels deflated in that sleepiness. But that's where the real challenge comes. In the moment of boredom, when nothing new is being seen, because boredom won't ever look to see anything new. The inherent quality of boredom is it doesn't pay attention. And nothing new can be seen unless we pay attention. And the boredom is just seeing everything as the old saying thing because it's not paying attention. You see how it's just a chicken and the egg? How it's just a cat chasing its own tail? And so we say, attention above all else. I don't care what goes on in our meditation. Attention above all else. Now, invite that in. Invite it in. This is not going to be my life's definition. And that sense of not willing to pay attention, you see, boredom is a lack of intentional focus on reality. That's how the mind is configuring itself. So that everything is fuzzy, that nothing is really seen for what it is. That unfocused reality. Well, an unfocused reality is one that is not understood. Because to understand, we have to pay attention again. And so boredom wins through us not paying attention to it. It thrives in our lack of attention. And further, it says that this isn't worth paying attention. And if we just believe the mumblings of our mind to be who we are, then we're going to go, yeah, it really isn't. I mean, and then it also says that the problem is external, that the situation is boring. Right? Not boredom itself, but now it's the situation, it's lifeless, it's the sameness, everything. It's no matter the fact that it's creating that through lack of attention, the summation, the conclusion is what we feed upon. You're right. That's right. It's not worth paying attention right now. But you see, there's something in us that knows that. There's something in us that knows that. But you see, one of the things that what boredom allows is a kind of hedging of self-respect. It says, well, you know, it's not you that's the problem, it's the situation. And therefore, I don't have to own to my own sense of self-doubt or to my own sense of failure. Right? So that, you know, it's boring. That's the reason. And so I can escape my worst fear is that I'm a failure. And since boredom seems to call for something more enticing, then we seek its antidote in pleasure. And something that at least will feel comfortable. Because boredom has a sense of aversion in it. You see, it's a really multiple hindrance. There's a wanting. There's a impatience. There's aversion. There's dullness. See, interesting enough, just to take it apart, see what it's made up, what this stew is made of. It's very interesting. But how are we going to do that if we aren't willing to pay attention? And once we pay attention, the boredom can't maintain itself. See, what we're really afraid of in boredom, too, is the image that what if it's not the situation? What if it's not the situation that's boring? What if it's not externally? What if I am a boring person? Oh. Well, you tell me if there's a worse image that you could have of yourself. We're all afraid of that one. So when we find ourselves sliding into simplicity, into authenticity, we reconjure up the sense that we're getting close to being a boring person. Sparks something in us so that then we get sweet or nice or accommodating. Or we could go the opposite direction. Because when we're not holding on to a sense of self-excitement, we slip into really what's authentic, which is inward quietness, which from the mind's point of view is the prime example that you are a boring person. Now, see what we're up against? How many of us are willing to go through that? We get afraid that we are what we fear the worst about ourselves. And so we spring into action and become the life of the party. Boredom's image and the fear of that image . We fear the lifeless energy within, don't we? When it's just the opposite. Of being uninteresting to others. Not up to living. Not up to living. Isn't that our greatest fear? And a permutation of that is that I'll be ordinary. And maybe boredom confirms my worst sense of the world, that it's not worth living. Whoa! You see, these are hidden, little hidden, closeted things that I love just to spring open those doors, throw them out there. Life isn't worth anything. Let's look at that. Let's see if it's worth, if it's not worth living, good. We'll all do a Jim Jones. That shouldn't have gone on tape. The present moment may not live up to its projected status. Right? Look, it's boring. I touched it and damn, it's boring. So that proves it. All the books wrong. What if all the books are wrong? What if all the Dharma books are wrong? The Buddha materializes in full aura and says, I made a mistake, it's all wrong. Who would stand up to him? Please get out of the way. That's what we're up against. We've hung our life, our shingle, our determination on that it isn't. And yet boredom proves it is. Proves the counter. Proves the speech wrong. How can this moment be so, whatever words or adjectives we might use, when it's boring? See, we're right on the edge there, you see. Now you either live or die. Because I like that. You see, until there's a catastrophe, until we're shoved, we don't know which way we'll go. But now we're being shoved. Okay? I look at this thing. Because if it's not here, it's not going to be anywhere. If I can't make this work, nothing works. If I can't live with this, if I can't understand this, then everything falls because it all comes down to this. It's either boring or it's not. And what does it mean not? Does that mean that boredom vanishes or does it mean something else arises in us? Where we stop playing the word game with the emotion. We stop following the content of the journey's content. Because boredom won't ever tell you anything except that it's boring and don't look. That's it. That's all it will ever say. It'll have different ways of saying that. So we got to look. The boring mind, come at me. And the sacred orientation to life lies within that stance, not within the different array and presentations of mind, not within the 10,000 patterns, colorations, but within the willingness to challenge each. Let me look at what these words of boredom. That life. Let me pay attention and see if it's true. Not just assume the words truth of the words. I've assumed the words, that dimensionality, my whole life. That's just going to keep following the same pattern. That's going to keep me on the continuum forever. In my reactive this and that against this and for that. And it just, it's a straight line into our own demise. Boredom is only itself. It says nothing about me, the world. It says nothing about anything. It's not a depiction of events. It's not a characterization of life. It is only itself, an emotion, and an accompanying story. The beliefs. Is this not worth? Is sleepiness not worth paying attention to? Is boredom not worth paying attention to? There's inherent aliveness within that stance. We cannot find it at the end of boredom. Aliveness doesn't come at the end of something. It comes in the midst of us standing up to something. Because each thing is itself alive. And if it's, we have proper orientation to each thing, then it will begin, we will fuse with its aliveness. It can be like this, or it can be like this. When we're following the journey of boredom, we're at right angles to that aliveness. When we hold it without the journeying into the words, we become in alignment, proper alignment to it. And it feeds that aliveness. I'm not moving from the mind. Who's willing to join me? So we disprove it by just seeing it on its own. Not for where it points, not for its summation, not for its conclusion. Consciousness is complete at all times. Consciousness is complete at all times. It never needs one thing added to it or subtracted from it. In fact, if you do, we are forever lost. To flee any aspect or any configuration of consciousness is to try to get over life. And we'll never find it. That's the new orientation. That's the new dimension. That's what wakefulness calls for. Thank you. Can we sit for a minute or two? So if there are any questions or comments, we'll go from there. Yes. He says that a large part of what he does at work every day seems boring. Seems boring. Let's put some distance between ourselves and the certainty that it is, okay? It seems that boredom arises. Quite often it's something that's routine that we've done over and over and over again. Quite often we have investigated or looked at and we know all component contingent parts. Quite often during that time, nothing new intrudes upon that situation. And we could do it in a rote manner that would be sufficient in terms of our boss's expectation or even our expectation. That's what we often mean by something being boring. It's so interesting, you see, the assumption there is that it's all the same as it's always been. But really, nothing is the same that it's always been. This moment is unreplicable. The sights, even at the level of the senses, where the senses come in, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, thoughts, all of those are very different. Even though I've been in this chair hundreds of times, it's a completely different experience. Sight, sound, smells, tastes, What's the same? We don't invite that difference. We don't invite that level of subtlety, of nuanced seeing. We say, oh, an audience. We wave the general flag of discontent. An audience. A talk. I've given hundreds. I've done this, worked on this assembly line 100 times. I know the guy next to me. I even know what he's going to say. Right? Our spouse. Boring. We've lived with them for 20 or 30 years. See, all that's a whitewash. It's a complete whitewash. What is it that will wake us up to the new, except waking up to the new? When we are oriented to the new dimension of consciousness, boredom does not enter, does not have access. It doesn't even, it's not even vaguely there. Because everything is new. No assumptions are being made. Make an assumption and you'll get a knowing that resides within that assumption. You'll get, I know what that is from the assumption. As soon as we make something known, we're no longer looking at it for what it is, which is new. As soon as we do that, we open the gate for a whole range of mind states to come in following the assumption we have made. One of them is boredom, because we've seen it before. Other questions or comments? Yes. They are different. His question is around sleepiness. He feels is different than boredom, and I kind of linked them together. Sleepiness feels more physical to him, and boredom is more mental. Well, sleepiness is also mental. And there's a common denominator there of dullness or non-vitality that often feels very different than what our expectations of real meditation should be. It should be vital, it should be active, it should be alert, it should be, which are all conditions, which are all just states of mind that come and go. What is it that holds, what is it that's more fundamental than those states and conditions? Sleepiness, dullness, or boredom? What is it that's more fundamental to that? You see, is the awareness, Awareness isn't depleted by conditions. Awareness just sees what's passing through. That's all it does. It doesn't become confused or disoriented or colored by what passes through any more than this air is colored by my hand passing through. You see, there is the ability to hold everything the mind has to offer in awareness, so that the mind doesn't color anything that awareness sees, just like that. But if there's any residence taken up at any point from any state of mind that is passing through, then the summation of the awareness will have that coloration of that assumption. Do you see that? So if there's a part of you that really feels bored as things are passing through, then the whole of the awareness that's looking will have that tinge and coloration of everything being boring. Because boredom isn't being seen completely. It's being seen 50%, and 50% it's being identified with. And that identifying link forms the very crux of the problem and the assumptions we make with whatever we see. It only takes 1% of being lost to be completely lost. It's a total sum game. I hope that doesn't sound hopeless to you. It's not. If it does, it means hopelessness is coming and you're identifying with that particular level. You can the mind just will is ceaseless in its need to identify, its need to live within the accompanying state of mind. So what the practice requires is a heart that is unwilling to take up any residence. And because awareness always knows the most subtle aspect of mind, can always, because it's more fundamental than the mind, then it can, if it's willing, see that subtlety. Or it can give itself over and identify with it, which is what we do most of the time. But if it's willing, if it's finished with it, it says, if it has to be finished with it, then nothing can contaminate it. For most people, it feels like an extraction process, where awareness is extracting itself from all the identifying ways. And we do it through looking at the torturous way that the mind states treat us when we are embedded and identified within it. And we get tired of being treated like that. We wouldn't put up with a spouse who treated us like that. But we put up with our own mind doing that to us until something in us says, I deserve better than this. Huh? And then that's it. You see, it's not a question of practicing for 30 years. It's a question of being fed up. Not aversively. See, words don't cover the whole. You say this and then you got to say that in order for you not to. So it's not a fed up. It's like, that's it. I love you, dear, but we're no longer going to. I'm not staying in this house with your rolling pin at my head. Bad example. What I want to give you is a sense of the aliveness, of this standing up, of this verticality. Not of the labor intensive. Mind loves labor because labor feeds it. It makes it feel like it's going somewhere. It gets its own image from the labor we put in. God, meditation, 20 years, 15,000 retreats. It has nothing to do with that. In fact, we're in cahoots with it. The sincerity has to reach a depth . That's it. I don't know how to frame it. And that's how it comes to me. It may come very differently to you. But at some point, you're just not willing to play the game of it. And then the dimension changes. doesn't mean that you don't go back into the old dimension of mind and see yourself. It doesn't matter, but the game is essentially over. Once it's seen, the game is essentially over because you have the orientation, you have the map, you know what to do. And what you do is you don't do anything. Up until that point, we've been full of doing, but now you don't do anything. And that's the way out. Because as soon as you do something, a new mind state has grabbed your attention, your identification, and you're off and running with that. And now I'm going to do something about that. And now I'm going to do something about that. And this orientation is about being still with. And that's the one thing that none of us have done because it seems disempowering. It seems non-self-affirming, which it is. The other way is self-affirming. I'll do this about that, and I'll do this about that, and I'll do this about that, and we just... But then you get serious. And so the sun comes out. You say, oh, whoa, wait a second here. It doesn't mean it doesn't, again, you know, for most people, the sun is seen and then the clouds form again, but the sun is seen. And now it's the difference between knowing every step of the journey and kind of wandering around not really knowing how to get the hell out of this maze. I know where the gold box is. Once it's seen, you know where the gold box is and you're walking right towards it. Whereas you're just bumping into walls the other way. You know, my brother once told me I was lost in a maze. He says, follow the left hand, just stay on the left hand thing and eventually you'll get to the gold box. Right, but you also get to every single dead end. And so much of practice has to do with staying to the left side. It gives teachers a vocation. Watch that. The teacher should want to become unemployed. Well, maybe not unemployed. Yes.
I've been watching myself lately when I start to grumble or contract about something. I ask myself, you know, would you really want to miss this moment?
Good. Beautiful, Pamela.
And I haven't come up with anything.
Good for you. She says that when she feels herself grumbling, she'll stop and say, do you really want to miss this moment? Another thing you can ask is, what in my life shouldn't be happening? What in your life should not be happening? Your divorce? How about your cancer? What in your life shouldn't be happening? Do you really want to miss this moment? Do you really want to wait to the end of boredom? Do you? Do you want to miss boredom? Okay, good enough tonight. Thank you all very much.